Hello, and welcome to Teen Scientist. I'm your host, Abigail Wood, and doing our audio engineering today is James Ziperot. Here on Teen Scientist, I bring you stories of groundbreaking innovation in the STEAM disciplines entirely from a youth perspective. We feature young researchers and respected experts in their fields at the local, national, and international levels. Today, I'm thrilled to introduce someone who's inspired generations of students. Jeff Holzman. For over two decades, Jeff was a dedicated general science teacher in Allentown School District, shaping curious minds in the classroom. But teaching is only part of his story. Now retired from the classroom, Jeff is still as active as ever. He is involved in real estate and currently serves as president of the Allentown Youth Soccer Club for over 19 years now, where he continues to mentor and lead young people, this time on the field. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on here.
Yeah, of course. I'm so thrilled to have you on and kind of share how your science journey and now your journey now is today. Before we kind of get into your science journey, let's kind of spend some time in getting to know you.
Very well.
The president of the Allentown Youth Soccer Club, what kind of inspired you to take on that role? Was it?
Well, I am actually now retired from that role as well. I'm
Oh,
an
really?
ex-president. Yes. And finally remember that time, really very, very proud of the time that I spent along with my family helping to introduce soccer to kids in Allentown, and not only soccer, but it provided some community for families. You know, when people join a team, their kids join a team, they're also joining a team of parents as well. And so for the adults, it's a chance to make some connections. People supported each other by, you know, ride sharing to practices and to games and things like that. And I still stay plugged in on AYSC's Facebook page and see what's going on. And it's really great to see young kids and their families having a good time and enjoying the game. For me, over that career, at one point I was so involved, my wife Kelly decided that if she was going to spend some time with me, she'd join also. And so she was treasurer for better part of a decade, I want to say. My son Lewis graduated from being a player to being a coach, and he still is. He developed the website that they currently use, and still runs that. And my daughter Kate coached for a little while, you know, after being a player for a while. So it was really good to, you know, gratifying to have my whole family at one point or another participating in that and giving back.
I mean, it's a beautiful program, and everything that the program does is honestly incredible, especially shaping those kids that might not have the opportunity to play soccer. Have you ever kind of seen overlap between like coaching young athletes and teaching science students?
Actually, as I went further into my teaching career, I started to employ more coaching techniques in the classroom.
So it was the opposite.
It probably went both ways. I'm sure there was classroom stuff that went, but frankly, when I was coaching, I was usually coaching like kindergartners, which was a nice break because my day job involved middle school and high school students over my career. But I found in the classroom a great response to kind of the positivity of the coaching experience. And so I find myself kind of coaching. I was teaching, but I was also coaching. And so I really kind of used that vibe, I think. And I think that helped me to connect with kids
Yeah.
in the classroom.
I mean, it's so cool how like the overlap of both those things can kind of affect it. So outside of science and soccer, how do you like to spend your time now? Any hobbies or pastimes or passions you have?
Well, I spend a lot of time, I'm kind of a homebody, so I spend a lot of time around the house, in the garden. When I say gardening, we do have a small vegetable garden. Our property's kind of shady, so we don't have a lot of good sunlight, but we have a small garden, tomatoes and peppers. We just got them in last weekend, a little bit late, but better late than never. We've been focusing on native plantings lately. Especially after my wife retired, she started getting involved more in the planting. At one point in my career, I was a landscaper, or for 15 years I was a landscaper before teaching, and so I used to take care of everything around the house here. And then while I was still working and she was not, she really took an interest and started to introduce more of the natives into the landscape
That's
around here. And so we've been learning a lot about it. just kind of allowing some of these plants to do their own thing. Some of them don't
Yeah.
make it, some of them thrive, and then we just kind of move things around to where we think they're going to do the best. So that's science. We're
Yeah, I was just gonna
experimenting.
say, even outside of like your job, it's still you're incorporating science somehow, and I love that.
Yeah, absolutely. And we can, when we get a chance, we get out to see live music, especially in the summertime when you can sit outside and chill.
Yeah.
And lately we've been traveling a little bit more. And ironically, that the travel is not purely for travel's sake, but getting a point in my life where young people that I know are beginning to get married. And so had some destinations going to weddings. Last fall we went to Utah for the wedding of a young man who had stayed at our place for a little while. And we're just out to Wisconsin 2 weeks ago for a nephew, and then we're going to Italy to
Oh,
see a young
wow.
man get married in August. And so that's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I actually was just in Utah and it was beautiful. I loved it. So,
That is an amazing state, and
yes.
the diversity of
Mountains.
ecosystems out there, from the
Yes.
dry southern parts, the red rock country, up to the mountains, the ski areas, and then the Great Salt Lake is its own kind of
Own
crazy
section
kind of
and Park
ecosystem.
City. It's honestly like incredible. You have all of those. We were talking about it. You could literally see, like you said, the desert, then the Rocky, then the ski. It was incredible. And you don't have that here in Pennsylvania.
No, we don't. On that wedding trip, we spent some time in each of those ecosystems, did some hiking, and in 10 days, we did as much as we could, and really, really learned a lot. Do a lot of reading while you're out there, whatever's available in the parks and whatnot. But just, the geology, where it intersects with, the living things in the area, and how things develop over time. And then you learn about some of the issues that people are dealing with. For example, they're a little bit worried about their in the mountain area, in the snow areas. They're a little bit worried about decreased snowfall recently as the lake is shrinking, because they do get lake effect snow from that lake, and the lake is shrinking because of drought conditions out there. And so they're looking at strategies to reduce their use of water to help conserve. And so it's very interesting how that all
Very
intersects.
interesting, and like how it's like completely different than from over here. I just love it. So it's very clear that community and mentorship are central to everything you do and science throughout your entire life. So now I'd kind of like to rewind a bit and learn where your love for science first began. Was there like a particular moment? I know you talked about you were a landscaper before you taught science. Kind of what sparked your interest?
Well, I've always, like when I was in school, I liked
Yeah.
science. I liked history. When it was time for me to become a teacher, those were the two, which way should I go? Which path should I take? And I was interested and just naturally drawn to science, interested in science. Teaching is actually my third career. I didn't start teaching until I was 41 years old. My first career out of college was working in manufacturing plant, and I was in charge of plant safety. And in that role, I at the time, the government was requiring companies to gather all the data on any hazardous materials in their factories. And now it's called hazard communication, or was at that time. And so now everywhere you go, even in schools, there's a binder with a data sheet for each chemical, even the cleaning supplies in the
Yeah.
cabinet in the janitor closet. And you can imagine in a manufacturing plant that binder was quite thick. I had to compile that. I had to was reaching out to manufacturers and reaching out to department heads who were reaching out to manufacturers to put this book together. And I was learning about the chemicals and the chemical processes. And manufacturing plant I was working in was making TV picture tubes, the
Oh,
old
wow.
school kind that are really big and heavy. And that plant was recently automated. I'm going back, this is 1986. So maybe in 1984, 1985, it was automated, partially automated, which helped to reduce a lot of the lifting and back injuries that a lot of the workers were experiencing. So robotics, conveyor belts, barcode readers
Yeah.
that were sending product to different production lines, that was all really, really new technology, state of the art at the time. And it was really helping to reduce back injuries and stress injuries on, on people,
Which was
repetitive
important.
motion injuries. So, I was learning about chemicals. I was learning about mechanics a little bit. I was learning a little bit about the medical concerns of many of the employees who had been working there for many years and had been getting, banged up and injured over all this time, and things were getting better. But that was like old school manufacturing. That's the way things were. People picked up and moved heavy things. And so there was a lot there to learn, a lot of science, in all different
Say, like,
disciplines.
you had, I feel like, all of this STEM discipline in kind of your life. You've had the manufacturing and the chemical side of science, and then more of the nature side, and then you got to kind of utilize what you had and then mentor young students, which I think is so cool that you had kind of a background in science in a lot of different ways that then you could share with students. All of this, was there like a moment that was like super impactful through everything? I know you talked about how when it kind of became more automatic in the plant, that that was a lot and that was very helpful for your workers, but was there another kind of moment?
No one moment really, but I would have to say for anybody. So I said that teaching was my third career, and now I real estate, I'm on my fourth career. A lot of kids, I think, are worried about, well, what am I going to do with my life? How is this going to work? And they're worried about picking the right major, or maybe not picking anything at all because they're just afraid to choose the right thing. But if you learn something from what you've done in the past and find some way to apply it to what you're doing currently, you will prosper from that. You can always bring prior experience, whether it's what you learned in a manufacturing plant. I spent 15 years landscaping, planting things and cutting people's lawns. As it turns out, I didn't really like corporate America. The manufacturing plant was fascinating, but the office part of it I thought was terrible. And so I left. I had done landscaping kind of work to make money to go to college. So I kind of went back to that for a little while. And naturally there is plants, soils, weather, water, and the interaction between all of those things, a lot of learning there. And you take all of that. And then also when I was landscaping, now I'm dealing face to face directly with people in neighborhoods, and I'm trying to sell my business and customer service. And boy, that's a huge one. Learning how to do things right and do them again if you don't do them right the first time.
Learning how to
And
communicate with people is definitely super important nowadays.
exactly, it always has been. I mean, maybe the modes were a little bit different back in the day, but it's always extremely important to communicate clearly. I think I started to learn that at RCA at the manufacturing plant because I did a lot of writing and I wrote the plant newsletter, and I had to do training with people and things like that. And maybe the training part, maybe that's where I got the bug for the teaching part that came 15 years later. So there, it's never about what's right in front of you or what you think you might want to do, or if you don't know what you want to do right now, it's okay. Because if you just get out there and start to do something and do the best you can at it, you're going to be able to take that knowledge and apply it somewhere else that grabs your attention further on down the line, even if it's 15 years later.
Which is great advice for nowadays, because I feel like that is such like going into college and being in high school right now, kind of everyone around me is like, what am I going to do my whole life? I have to decide right now, when really you have years and years to decide. And I think a lot of people don't understand that. And I love that you kind of said that and said what you've learned and taken and how many aspects you've gone through. Well,
Yeah.
we're going to take a short break. I'm your host, Abigail Wood, here with Jeff Holzman.
WDIY has been broadcasting in the Lehigh Valley and beyond for 30 years, providing news.
These planes were hijacked.
The Bethlehem Steel Corporation will end its steelmaking production in Bethlehem.
We hope that you enjoyed hearing from the Dalai Lama.
Local public affairs.
As I say, it's a race of interest.
What we're experiencing today will later on be studied.
And music.
My name is Janice Ian.
Our guest, Lake Street Dive.
In a few minutes, we're going to be talking to Petey Yarrow from Peter, Paul and Mary.
WDIY, since 1995.
Hi, I'm your host, Abigail Wood, here with Jeff Holzman. After building this kind of rich academic foundation, you stepped into the classroom. Let's talk about those first years of teaching and how your philosophy evolved. Can you kind of walk us through your early years teaching general science in the Allentown School District? What were kind of like challenges and surprises that you had?
Okay, so I started out 41 years old, first year teacher, and there are several things that were going on. The same day that I started seventh grade teaching, my son started sixth grade in the same school. And of course, for the next couple of years, my son and my daughter, we were all in the same school together. And sometimes there were challenges within the family dynamic there. Generally, my son was pretty cool with it. If I passed him in the hallway, we'd kind of high five going by. And my daughter would like kind of hide on the other side of the hallway. Well, I'm not here. You don't see me. So they each reacted differently to me teaching. And then also 12-year-olds are challenging. Sometimes they're finding themselves. Sometimes they come off with no real filter as to what they're saying or doing. And so I was teaching 12-year-olds in the classroom during the day, and then I was coming home to my own 12-year-olds in the evening. So there was a few years there that I never really got a break. Another thing that was a little bit ironic, because I looked older, a lot of other teachers just kind of, maybe not immediately, but certainly by the second year, people were talking to me or relying on me, or kind of like I was an older teacher, older experienced teacher. I mean, I looked older, and maybe I acted older, but I was still first year teacher in first year teacher mode, trying to like writing every single lesson plan every single night, trying to figure it out.
Trying to get the groove.
Yeah, trying to figure out how to manage kids. Also right in there, Trexler was undergoing a renovation. And so we were moving classrooms to different buildings, and I was sharing a classroom with a very thin divider wall with another teacher, and we had different styles. And so there were all kinds of crazy things going on at the time. So it was very stressful. And that's one thing I didn't really count on, the stress. But anytime, any new job is stressful. So once again, for your listeners out there who might be graduating this year and going into a new job or going to school, it gets stressful because it's all new and you're inventing the wheel for the first time, so you think. but some of the ways you counteract that is by finding allies, other people on staff to help you. And there were other teachers that gave a lot of great advice, gave me their lesson plans and coached me on how to do it. You know, just working with the kids, just try to rely on my own natural personality, but also kind of finding a groove, trying not to be so old fashioned and listening how they talk and talk back with them a little bit the way they speak. Made some mistakes, and some of those mistakes I regret, like losing my temper with somebody. You know, losing my temper with a 12-year-old kid. Come on, kid's 12 years old, right? But I always try to look back on that as like, you know, I'll never do that again. And if I could ever find that kid again as an adult, I would apologize to them. You know,
at least you're still thinking about it and have like you're learning and those mistakes, because some people wouldn't even think about that. They would happen and they would just move on. And at least you're learning, and kind of throughout your whole life, you've been learning, as it seems.
You have to consider your mistakes. I mean, your victories are great, but you have to consider your mistakes and have to learn from them, you know, so that you don't continue to make them. One thing that's been gratifying about teaching and still living in Allentown, living in the same community, is every now and again, I run into somebody, and generally they'll recognize me before I recognize them, because, you know, they don't look like they're 12 years old anymore. They're grown up. And I still look fairly much the same, maybe a little grayer and a little less hair, but I look pretty much the same. And generally, all these interactions are pretty good. You know, people remember me, and with a little prompting, I usually remember them as well. And it's nice to catch up on, you know, they have families now, what their job is, what they're doing. Sometimes I had former students bringing their children to play soccer. That was really cool.
Yeah, that's
cool. So I was coaching their kindergartners on the soccer field, and they're sitting on the sidelines. So that happened more than twice. So, you know, there's a lot of good things that down the line that come out of it that you don't think about at the moment.
Yeah. You were saying how like kind of your students and you interact with them now. You taught students across multiple grade levels, 7th through 12th grade. How did you adapt your content and teaching strategies across the range as like you went from different grades?
I found out early on that my sense of humor and jokes went over the heads of seventh graders. So I had to modify. I had to modify that a little bit. Was more successful with 11th and 12th graders, but I had. I'm a more serious person, and I had to, as a middle school teacher, try to be like more fun. And so sometimes I went in and I was acting a little bit because I'm more of a straight man. And not that I want to be a funny guy, but also just try to make lessons a little bit more fun and engaging.
Yeah, because that's like the age that you need to, so then they pay attention. Where high school
right.
is more, they want to
Well,
pay
as it turns out, that's helpful in high school too.
attention.
And when I could do that, I would. Also, I learned over time, like the reading and writing levels of my students. In middle school, I was teaching, I usually had a class of honors kids, and then I had several classes of regular ed kids, and I usually had classes with some special ed kids and classes with English language learners in them. So as time went on, I got better at aiming things so that everybody was getting the same message,
Yeah.
but kind of in a different way.
Speaking of kind of messages, was there certain experiments or units that you remember that students always loved?
Physical science, and I taught physical science in one way or another, even
Yeah.
up at the high school level when I was doing astronomy, a lot of physical science there. In environmental science, there's physical science underlying those topics. But when we were playing with running cars down ramps and dropping things and measuring things, that was probably the most fun things to do. And I think kids like that the best.
Yeah.
Most recently, toward the end of my career, astronomy. Ironically, I think COVID brought my game up there a little bit. There was no online astronomy program that the district put
Oh,
forward for me
yeah.
to teach. So I had to modify my what I was doing in the classroom and put it online. And so my graphics got better. And astronomy is really fun and cool. Like the pictures are cool and space is cool. Space kind of captures people's imaginations. And so I think I got better with animations and things that kind of help kids make sense of the motions of what's going on in the solar system up there. And so I think a lot of kids really like astronomy just because, you know, astronomy is kind of cool.
You talked about in COVID. How is teaching in COVID? That seems like kind of far away, but yet it wasn't so far away because it was only 5 years ago.
That was extremely challenging. Total shifting of gears. Kids were teaching themselves more.
Yeah.
A lot more kids weren't showing up or showing up much more sporadically.
Or showing up but
And
sleeping.
yes, there's a lot of that going on, I feel, or pretending to show up. Their online
Cameras
presence
off.
was there, but I don't think they actually were. And I really felt for a lot of kids. Sometimes if a mic went on, I could kind of hear chaos going on in the background, a lot of other siblings in the same room, and it just must have been very, very difficult for kids. And so I really appreciate that and try appreciated it then too, and tried to give as much grace as possible to kids. And so I spent a lot of time in the Allentown School District, the program that we had. It was very easy to keep track of where people were. And I would be able to literally tell them, okay, you know, if you want to get an A, you have to do this, this, and this. Going to settle for a B, this, this, you know, and I would be able to tell them exactly what they had to do to hit the mark by the end of the quarter. And a lot of kids rose to that challenge. It had two very opposite online experiences. One was counseling a young student who lost a family member, an older family member who had been living with her since ever she could remember. Made a connection with that student and just was a shoulder for her to cry on. And that was just very strange because I had never met this person face to face. When we got back to school, she ended up in one of my astronomy classes. And so that was really nice to get to know her a little bit better. Another student who I believe was a refugee, he's definitely from Africa, didn't get to know him personally online, but get to know him as a very hardworking student, learning a language.
Oh, wow, learning the language. Wow.
Learning language while learning astronomy and
That's
whatever else
tough.
he was learning. wrote him a letter of recommendation to get into college. He got into college, just
Uh-huh.
graduated 2 weeks ago from college with an engineering degree, and a very successful, he was a track guy, a track and soccer player at the time. I met him once in person at a track meet. You know, as we were still masking at track meets and that kind of thing. That's really gratifying to see that guy, you know, do well. And we've got to hit him up to find out what his next move is at this point, you know, if he's got a job lined up or what he's going to
Yeah.
do. But yes, COVID kind of presented a lot of opportunities for a different kind of communication. I'm so glad we're not there anymore.
Yes.
But definitely opportunities to continue teaching and mentoring from my perspective. And made a lot of phone calls to parents at that time too, just to try to keep, especially the kids who were wandering off, that I feel like I was losing. And I could see they were walking away from their other classes as well. And you know, had a lot of conferences with parents and the kids, and feel like I kept a few kids on track there. And so I feel good about that. And, you know, kind of rough as the format was.
COVID was definitely, I mean, I experienced that as a student too, definitely a shift. But even though through all of its challenges, I feel like the schools now and how we learn has definitely advanced since COVID. Even though it was kind of a rocky start, we now, I feel like, utilize some things from COVID and then also are back to the old ways, kind of depending on the teacher, I would say.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would definitely, if I was still in there, or when I did go back, I was definitely using more technology afterward than I had been using before, and being very comfortable with it. One thing that I started to struggle with afterwards, and because I have friends that are still teaching, I know is a big struggle now, is the cell phone use, the non-productive cell phone use. I would have kids use phones in the classroom for quick lookups, for online, or like a quick quiz type of thing. I had their quiz
Yeah.
apps, they, you know, engage kids. But it feels like the cell phone culture has gone too far and much of a bigger distraction. And I understand your school district is changing policy to really control cell phone use in
Yeah,
school. Is that correct?
when I go into the classroom, it really depends on the teacher. Some are like, put it away in your backpacks. You can have it in your backpacks, but if I see it, is getting taken away because I'm more in higher classes. So a lot of the students in my classes, I would say, follow it and are more concerned on learning rather than being on our phones, just because, or like in discussions, that's kind of how we are. Or
Okay,
some
yeah.
teachers are like, you can have it when I'm not teaching or when you don't have any work. Like, you finished all your work, I'm not teaching, go ahead, you can go on your phones. They're more lenient. And then some teachers, you have to put it in a cell phone holder. So it really honestly depends on the teacher, and I would say the level of trust they have with their students and really kind of what they feel is most comfortable for them and what they learn. But I haven't had any issues yet, but I've known a lot of students who have. And it is definitely challenging when you have like your cell phone and all your friends and like all that, and then you're in school. So, yeah, I definitely know how that is now growing up.
I really have concerns about not the phones themselves, but the marketing that happens.
Yeah.
For example, I was working in one of my tenants' apartments. I was fixing something, I can't remember what, and a small child, toddler, maybe 2 years old, and had some kind of handheld device, and I could hear a different, like different tunes coming up, kind of on a rotation, and like every fifth or sixth tune that the Mario Kart song would come on, and just for like a 30-second snippet, and then it would move on to something else. And I really don't know what the visual was. I wasn't watching the kid.
Yeah.
I was fixing the sink at the time, but it occurred to me, like, oh my God, this kid is listening to this and getting this Mario Kart. And then when they get old enough to be a kind of a consumer, they're going to be buying Mario Kart. It's getting ingrained. It's
Yeah.
getting ingrained, and that kid has no chance. It's already in her
In their
brain.
brain, yeah.
And so I feel like the marketing that goes through these devices is insidious. And so I worry about generations that are being marketed without even them knowing,
Knowing.
without the parents knowing.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, I feel like your generation is going to be the one to figure out how to moderate that.
I think definitely, because I do, like,
you got to.
when I speak with my friends and we talk about middle school kids or elementary school kids, we're always like, we didn't have a phone back then. Or if we did, we like had like the newest iPhone, and like we didn't really use it because our parents restricted it. And we really grew up with, I'm very happy that I didn't grow up in like having the newest phone in fifth grade. I didn't get a phone till seventh grade, actually. I think that was really important because it led me to use my imagination and all of that, where kids nowadays are on social media already. Nowadays, it's a lot of people, especially my age, are seeing how destructive it is. Thank you.
I'm glad you can see that.
Oh, yeah. It's completely, like, it can be great. There's a lot of great things, and we can use technology to advance so many things in life. But then it can also be just, like, kind of brain mush. Like, it's not productive at all.
Right. Good way to put it. Not
Yeah.
scientific at all.
No, not scientific. You can use technology in a lot of scientific ways, but a lot of people don't. Well, thank you, Jeff Holzman, so much for joining us today. Your journey from the classroom to the community is a true testament to the lifelong impact of educators. And thank you to all our listeners for tuning in this week on this week's episode of Teen Scientists.